I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Representation is at the core of what I do. I'm Jaguar. I'm a DJ and broadcaster living in London. I'm also a mixed race woman, and whether I like it or not, that affects everything I do and how I'm seen in the patriarchy of the modern world. Supporting those who are underrepresented in music, particularly women, trans and non-binary people, is a very important part of my mission. In August last year, I launched the Jaguar Foundation and released a report exploring gender inequality in dance music. During my research, I found this quote from the late Audre Lorde, a poet, writer and black queer feminist.
The human race is evolving through women. We've got to take that promise of new power seriously.
She's basically saying that for thousands of years, the world has developed with men in power. And now that women are finally being granted the same opportunities that men have had, we have the power to change things and set a totally new agenda. This works as a metaphor for any minority who challenges oppression. We are bringing a totally fresh perspective to evolve society. I find this deeply inspiring. And right now, in electronic music, it feels like we are undergoing a cultural shift where women, trans and non-binary people are the ones taking up space, speaking out against the canon and pushing for equal opportunities. I can feel a change in the air. But as we found out in the previous episode, it isn't always straightforward. Take this story from Jam Supernova, for example.
Hi, my name is Jam Supernova and my pronouns are she and her. I'm a DJ, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm a label owner. An experience that I've had as a woman in dance music that you'd probably laugh at now, but I remember at the time being really upset by it. I was on after this DJ, he was playing before me, a guy, and I went to go and get something out of my bag, which was underneath the decks and in the booth, and he was like, you shouldn't be in here, you need to get out, I'm DJing right now, you need to get out. And I was like, pardon? I'm coming on after you, I wanted to get set up. He was like, no, you're not playing after. And I sort of said, like, I'm Jam Supernova. And he was like, oh, I thought Jam Supernova was a guy. And it got kind of really weird and awkward. And it wasn't the best way to start my set because I genuinely could see he just didn't believe that I was who I was or the fact that I deserved to be in the booth with him.
I feel Jam's pain. Not long ago, this bouncer kicked me out of my own green room where I was prepping for a set for the same reason. He didn't believe that I was the artist. Here's another one for you.
Hi, I'm Paulette. My pronouns are she, her. By night, I'm a DJ, and by day, I'm an author, radio presenter, and music industry professional. One experience I've had as a woman in dance music is that people still think I'm new to the game after 30 years, and that female DJs are still considered a novelty by many.
New to the game? That is so crazy to me. I feel so lucky to have got to know Paulette over the years. And if you don't know, DJ Paulette is an absolute pioneer. She's been a big part of the UK scene since the 90s with her Flesh residency at the Hacienda starting in 1991. And I love now that she speaks out a lot about her experiences as a queer black woman. And if you ever get the chance to see her DJ, definitely make sure you go support her. The point is, representation really matters. The more people see female, trans, and non-binary DJs taking up space, the more it will become the norm. Welcome to Utopia Talks.
If you have a diverse lineup, you are going to encourage a more diverse crowd because they're going to feel more comfortable in that space, because if you've thought about them on the lineup, you have thought about the space that you're creating for them. My name is Michelle Minetti. My pronouns are she, they, interchangeable. I am a DJ and I run a club night called Femme Fresh, which is a Flinter-focused club night. For anyone who doesn't know what Flinter is, it's female, lesbian, intersex, non-binary, transgender and agender. And I've been in the industry maybe about 22 plus years.
I played a Femme Fresh.
You did.
What year was that? 20...
couple of years.
19?
Maybe a couple
just
of years.
Just before the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just before the pandemic, I think.
I had a lovely time, by the way.
Good.
As someone who, you know, sources a lot of women and non-binary talent, like, where do you look to find your DJs?
I mean, thing is, even though obviously when you're talking about the bigger scale of things and the big festivals and stuff, and you think, oh, there isn't as many, but actually on a grassroots level, there's loads, especially in London. And I make it my point to find out who new kind of female, non-binary, trans artists are that are coming through. A lot of it is all word of mouth, of course. And also it will be from people that I'm playing on lineups with. You know, I tend to get booked for a lot of queer parties myself. And then obviously there tends to be a lot more diversity within those queer parties. And also, like, what's really lovely is, like, particularly recently, I get a lot of people coming to me and, like, a lot of new DJs who've seen the party who think that they would be a fit, and they'll send me their profiles. Like, at least twice or three times a week, I'll get someone messaging me.
Nice.
And this is great because these are obviously, like, really young, fresh, up-and-coming DJs that are on the scene looking for places to go. And it's like, you know, they're putting themselves out there, which is fabulous.
Yeah, that's amazing. What do you think about playing festivals or club nights where you might be the only woman or queer person, or person of colour in my case? I always push back when I get these requests, and sometimes it just plain angers me that they've had the audacity to even make this lineup and try and book me for it. But at the same time, I have done some in the past, and I thought, if I don't do this, it's just going to be a bunch of white guys, or it's just going to be a bunch of straight people. So sometimes I'm torn because I'm like, well, in some ways I'm taking up space, which is good. But sometimes it's just so exhausting and, like, sad to be kind of put in that position, you know?
Mm. I guess it's the way that it's done, I think, for me particularly, is that if you can clearly see that you are a tokenistic thought and you're like, oh, I've got to tick a particular box. Like, yes, I want to create that representation, but at the same time, I don't want to be someone's box that's being ticked. I want to be booked on my own merit for me as a DJ. And I don't know, I think while visibility is important, I feel like that kind of visibility can be a bit toxic because you can guarantee that I know that if I'm the only queer female or female on a lineup full of, you know, a load of guys, I know what kind of crowd it's going to be. It's also probably not going to be that much fun for me to play at. And you know the kind of mentality of what the promoters and what their team is going to be like as well. And that's going to be quite an exhausting thing to play at. And maybe not, you know, you're going to have an experience where it might not actually be that comfortable for you. So it's these things that you've got to think about as well.
What's the answer? Because I genuinely, I'm still trying to figure out, to be honest. Is there an answer?
I mean, I just think it's really about education, isn't it? And continuing to educate people and continuing to push this kind of agenda that is about, you know, making space for everyone and showing that there is enough space for everybody. And really, like, just having conversations in a really positive way that is, you know, like speaking to DJs, like, would you rather play to an all-male audience or look out and see a really nice, diverse audience you're playing to? What makes you happier? I can guarantee you they'd like to see more diversity, like, unless they're an absolute fool. Like, and with that diversity comes, like, a lot of, you know, it becomes more colourful, it becomes more exciting.
More interesting,
right? It becomes more interesting, absolutely. And in a way, like, a little bit more challenging, because every single one of those audiences has got a different background, so they want something a little bit different. So as a DJ, that's, like, a challenge that you want to meet. And so just to see a sea of people that all look the same is boring. So, you know, when you go to a space that is largely men, then there's, like, this male toxicity that is there. And there's, you know, you get a bit of aggro and whatever, not always, but when you have this kind of really gorgeous, diverse lineup, and that's why I love playing on the queer scene, it's so colourful and it's so rich and it's so beautiful to be in this space with so many interesting, you know, diverse people. So how can that not be a positive? So if you continue to book all cis white male lineups, that's the audience you're also going to bring in. So if you have more diverse lineups, and that visibility will create more space for a more diverse audience, it's just more fun and more beautiful and more and nicer experience.
Michelle is bang on and a glowing example of somebody who is elevating those around her. When I was working on the report, I really wanted to speak to Annie Mack. Few people can claim to have had more successful or influential careers in dance music. She's accelerated the careers of countless artists, launched her own festival, and of course she was a pillar at BBC Radio 1 for 17 years. And for people of my generation, she was the voice who guided us into the world of dance music. I really wanted to hear her thoughts on the positive changes she's seen during her long career.
It really has changed in the last kind of 10 years especially. I've noticed a kind of escalation of sorts when it comes to the conversation of equality in dance music. And I feel like, you know, as I'm coming from a perspective of all music, dance music has been quite exemplary when it comes to pushing forwards this agenda of, you know, equality on lineups. So I know it's still awful and it needs loads of work, but when you zoom out, dance music's done pretty well. Obviously, it's come from a place and it was kind of invented and brought into the world by marginalised people. So the fact that it went the other way is fucking awful. The changes that have happened are mainly just me being able to see female DJs coming up and coming through. It's quite slow, you know, in terms of when it started. About 10 years ago, you saw a lot of the bottom lines of festival lineups being filled up with women. And now, obviously, these women are becoming more successful and they're moving up. I think also the changes that have happened have been that the gatekeepers, the big, powerful promoters and agents and managers, have been forced, whether they like it or not, to have to think about this and to have to discuss it and they're being called out on it if they don't represent a certain amount of women. I still think that people are getting away without doing it, and you have the same old argument that I found in the world of promotion, which is like, well, we are so and so and so and so and they couldn't do it, so like, what are we supposed to do? And my argument against that is like, you just do whatever it takes to make sure that you have an equal lineup, and if you go from the very start with that priority and that agenda, then you can do it. But they don't. I think that's the problem. It's kind of very much, they're kind of, it feels tokenistic sometimes. And I think they think if they've done the work in trying to get people and they don't get people, well, then at least they've tried. So all I can say about the changes that have happened is I like to try and be part of that myself in terms of having lost and found, and for the last 2 years, making sure that that lineup is fully equal, not just in terms of gender, but also in terms of, you know, race and ethnicity. It's kind of making it feel very diverse and representative. So as long as I can do that and I can show that it's possible, then hopefully that is a good argument to other people to show that it can be done.
Annie is such a badass, and yeah, she said it perfectly, how important it is to book lineups and make them diverse. Now, I've learned this summer from booking my own Utopia residency in London that it is really difficult to book a lineup. I appreciate that, especially if you want to make it diverse and book the acts that you like. However, I've been able to do it. I'm really happy with the lineup, and it's a whole mixture of sounds and people. And Annie is a shining example of someone who gets their lineups bang on. Lost and Found Festival in Malta every summer always has the best lineups, and they're 50-50. And we get it. We appreciate that sometimes it's difficult to book a lineup because of things like exclusivity. So that's when a DJ is booked to play in a city and they're restricted to play there again for a certain period of time, or budget, or loads of reasons why it can be hard, but it can be done. I also asked Annie about the changes she'd like to see in order for more female and non-binary artists to be represented.
More women in the boardrooms. It always comes down to that. More women or non-binary people in the boardrooms making the decisions. That's what it takes. You know, there's quite a lot of women that work behind the scenes in dance music, and when it comes to being managers or DJ or agents or kind of PR people, but there's always a point where those women kind of duck out or have to end up working part-time or become less powerful in their jobs because they stop and have families. Not all of them, of course, but the women who choose to do that. And you really notice women ducking out around then. And that is a time when men are able to kind of accelerate forwards and get those positions of power and keep them. So we need to find a way for women to be able to work flexibly. We need to be able to find a way for women who have their own companies, be it management companies, agencies, promotions companies, to be able to go off and have babies and have that company run underneath them. So it's about finding ways for women who run companies to be able to be supported, to be flexible, to be able to hand their artists over to someone and have their artists feel safe and for that woman to be able to come back. It's very, very difficult. It's not designed for women who want to have families. And we need to try and find a way to make dance music accessible and make the industry accessible for women who want to have families to be able to come back and do that. So that's a huge one. And yeah, I think, you know, it has to keep going the way it's going, but ideally a little bit faster in terms of seeing women be trusted to headline events, be trusted to be at the top of the tiers of festivals. And, you know, they're showing it again and again that they can sell out venues all over the world, that they have the power, they have the skills, obviously, to do that. It shouldn't even be fucking up for debate, but they're showing it. And, you know, money talks. That's all promoters care about. You know, you'll hear with those big festivals like Wireless or whatever, or Reading, it's like, well, there's no female headliners that sell tickets. So, you know, on a very base economic level, we have to be able to show that female headliners can sell tickets. And once that happens, which it has in the past, and obviously we know they can, then promoters will book them. But ideally, we'd have more women promoters, more women managers, more women agents, more women business owners, women setting the agenda in terms of dance music and how it's run, and obviously non-binary as well.
Annie mentioned motherhood there, which is such an important topic that doesn't get spoken about enough. I sat down with Laura, who is a producer, a DJ, a vocalist, and also a mother.
One of the biggest challenges for me has been this seismic shift in perspective. Like when you have a child or a baby, your whole perspective just shifts to protecting them, giving them what they need, nurturing them, and to the point where you actually kind of forget about your own needs for a while, ultimately, certainly for the first 6 months and then beyond that. And for me, that shift was so disorientating because I've spent my whole entire career in music just being trained to think about myself, you know, like everything is about my artistic projects. And so to have that massive shift in perspective in my home life where I'm just not thinking about myself. And then when I kind of came back to work when he was about 6 months old, I started stepping into the studio again for a couple of days a week. And it was like, whoa, this feels so uncomfortable suddenly, you know, because I'm still thinking about him, but ultimately I have to switch my brain back to like Laura artist mode rather than Laura mum mode. And that has been huge for me. And it's taken, it's only really now, he's 1.5, 18 months, that I'm starting to feel like I'm coming back to my full power. That has been very challenging for sure, like getting back into kind of artist mode, you know, and finding the energy also to make sure you look good. You know, and think about that stuff again, because it used to come so naturally to me, all of that, you know, the way I presented myself physically and online on my socials content and all that stuff. And then to like have this huge break from that, and then behind the scenes, you know, you're covered in just, everything's a mess, you know, everything's a mess when you become a parent, you know. I try and share as much of that as I'm comfortable with, you know, the kind of the ugly, stupid side of parenting alongside the kind of the glamour and the glitz of doing what it is I do for a job. I'm lucky enough and privileged enough to do for a job. But it messes with your head a bit, you know, to go between those two worlds.
I love that you do share a lot of your experience so publicly, you know. Like personally, I think it's really inspiring to know that you can be a woman in this industry and like be a DJ and be in music and be like successful. And you can obviously go off and have a baby and then keep going, keep doing that. And I'm not thinking about babies yet, but like, I know that, you know, when I want to be, I've seen like you, I've seen Jam Supernova do it, I've seen Annie Mac do it. And it's really inspiring. I don't know if you realize the impact that has, but it's really important to see.
Oh man, I'm pleased to hear that. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it was Annie Mac and Anna Luno as well, and and Jam Supernova is absolutely incredible. But yeah, seeing those guys, like especially Annie Mac, I feel like opened up post pandemic a little bit more about kind of the struggles of managing a career versus the parenting thing, and that was super inspiring because previous to these guys, you know, sharing that, I hadn't really seen anybody talk about it in our world. You know, I guess it's not the norm, but it is possible to do it. But yeah, I'm glad that's offering a little bit of inspiration out there. I think it's important, man, because if you don't see people doing the things that you want to do, you just have no idea that those roles exist.
How inspiring and honest. Love what you're doing, Laura. The final question I asked Annie was if she'd seen a type of female or non-binary dance and electronic artist that tends to break through. And if so, why does she think that might be?
If you go to the very top, as in the biggest names in terms of female and non-binary DJs, it is quite a mixed bag. You know, you have your Honey Dijons and your Black Madonnas or Blessed Madonnas and your Peggy Goos, which is great. But then there's a kind of big swathe of very successful techno DJs that all kind of look the same. So I think it would be very naive of me to say that, oh yeah, there's no, you know, they don't all look the same, because I think if you got all kind of successful female DJs and non-binary DJs, like 100 of them basically, of the most successful, you would definitely see that there's a huge lacking when it comes to people of colour and non-binary people. So I think the reason for that is, I think that so many of the gatekeepers and so many of the people with power are privileged and white. And I think that the actual act of becoming a DJ involves having space and money in order to learn your craft. So being able to afford decks, being able to afford mix programs, being able to have a space where you can go and DJ, all of that stuff involves having a level of money and wealth or investment in you that a lot of people just don't have. So I think you have to, at the moment, unfortunately, you don't have to, but it really helps and escalates your career if you come from a place of privilege where you are able to have the equipment that you need.
Despite dance music being rooted in black culture and queer culture, after many years of whitewashing and erasure of queer people, the industry can be particularly hard for black people, queer people, and artists of minorities to navigate. Here's Michelle Minetti, who we heard from earlier. Have you ever experienced any kind of physical or verbal altercation while playing in a club? Has that happened to you?
I have, but actually it wasn't actually with a man.
it was actually just to do with kind of queerness. And it was at Femme Fresh, and we had this group of like 20 hen party straight girls turned up. And I was DJing, and they were like, where are all the lesbians there? Where are all the lesbians? Were pointing at me like, there's one. And then just like,
no way.
Honestly. And then they were just like being really appropriate with kind of everybody in the club. To which point I was like, someone needs to kick them out. This is just not okay. That's to do with sexuality, not gender. But I guess it's still part and parcel of marginalization and how to be in a space and how to operate in a space with respect.
And here's the Blessed Madonna, one of the biggest producers in the world and my hero in dance music, who's collaborated with the likes of Dua Lipa and Fred Again, talking about their gender identity.
Hi, my name is the Blessed Madonna and my pronouns are she, her, they, them. I'm a DJ and I'm a producer and I'm a songwriter and I throw events and I'm also a radio presenter on BBC Six Music. As a non-binary woman, which is a complex idea, but is definitely how I would describe myself. As a non-binary woman in dance music, I wish that people knew how important it is that we keep a very close watch on the culture that we live in. We're living in a time where there's a rising tide of dangerous ideas that are in the ether, that are in the zeitgeist at this moment. And even amongst people who would say that, you know, I'm a feminist or I don't have any problem with trans people, all of these people who would seemingly be a part of the community and the kind of values that are really important to me, there is, even inside those supposed communities, a slide into ideas that I think are genuinely like dangerous for other people. If people could greet the women and non-binary people and so on around them with gentle and loving curiosity rather than framing the existence of other people as a debate or the presence of people as a debate, we would be a lot better, because I think that debating, that othering, it becomes a very real concrete danger for people's actual lives.
It's time for a break now, but after this, we'll hear from Talia and Salute, two artists who are inspiring positive change in our industry.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year. just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Next, I want you to hear from somebody I love to share a conversation with.
Hi, I'm Talia. My pronouns are she, her, and I am a musician, a DJ, and also a podcaster.
Talia is a rising star from Glasgow, and she's carving out a huge space in dance music with a large yet tight-knit community around her. I became obsessed with her bass-heavy, shimmering, pop-laden rave music after I first heard her in 2021.
I started making music just as I transitioned, as I like transitioned personally, because I'm trans. And I think there is a reason that both of the experiences correlated with each other and happened at the same time. I think that the way that I was making art before I transitioned, I was kind of using it as an outlet to investigate what I was feeling internally. Whereas as I started to express my internal dialogue externally, that's when I felt more of a freedom to kind of just do whatever I wanted.
Talia was the first black trans artist to be nominated at the Scottish Alternative Music Awards and the first ever artist to win two categories in the same year. She also was BBC Introducing Dance Artist of 2022, and I love that she's proudly taking up space and showing the world that she's an unstoppable force in dance music.
Because of the music that I make, or perhaps the audiences that attach themselves to my music more, there's a huge sense of community there, which feels very, very nice to be able to tap into, because I think that I've always experienced music through a community kind of lens, kind of like experiencing my first experiences of like the Glasgow club scene, and then like moving to Berlin, and then like going to London and experiencing like the queer community and things, and like the queer community here in Glasgow as well. There's always been this kind of idea of withstanding and togetherness that I think would be really, really strange to experience my career without that.
As you heard in the previous episode, safety and being safe at work is a huge worry for women, trans and non-binary people in music. I'm very aware of my position of privilege as a cis woman, so I'm interested to hear Talia's take on this.
I have a lot of stipulations in my rider on kind of like what needs to happen in order to ensure my safety, and a lot of the time people don't follow that, and I think at gigs you're only as safe as how much the promoter cares, and a lot of the time when you're dealing with promoters, they will not be of any kind of like marginalised background, so there will not be this kind of like inherent camaraderie or collective thought on perhaps what it means for you to be safe and what it means for them to be safe, and how they interact with the space and how you interact with the space. The two are wholly different a lot of the time. But I think a lot of the time you just need to make them listen, which is a difficult thing, because I think people, especially when you talk about like taxis to and from venues, or like a late checkout, or just like an escort or things like that, people think that these are just like luxuries to offer an artist, and they're not. They're a means to which we are able to go and do our job, the job that you have hired us to do, with ease and not necessarily have to like damage our own mental well-being in order to do that. Because there have been like awful times when I've been on tour where just like the most horrific of interactions have happened, and it's just due to a lack of intent or a lack of care, which is like the most heartbreaking thing, because you think, oh, if you had only cared a little bit more, or if you had only understood just a little bit more, then perhaps I would not have had to like do that or like experience that or go through that, you know.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry to hear that. It's hard, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, you want to do these gigs and be booked and obviously play and do your job and get paid as well, but then it's like all these other extra things you have to think about. And I think it's really important to talk about this, because I guess also, like, if you're a promoter and, you know, maybe you're like a cis white man, and like, you know, they might not even have considered what other people might need to feel safe when they're going to work.
Yeah.
One of the things I've experienced is like keyboard warriors online, and people love to tell you you're doing a great job when
people
you're
love to talk.
And they also love to tell you that they don't like what you're doing, or accuse you of like not mixing, or like comment on your appearance, or just be a bit of a dick. And like, how do you deal with, have you ever had anything like that, and how do you kind of deal with it? Because I try and I have a reply really sassily, is that a word? I have a reply with some sass, or if they're like slagging off the gender report, I'll be like, well, have you actually read it? And I'll link them to the website, and often they just don't reply, or they leave. But I mean, yeah. Do you have like a coping mechanism?
With kind of like stuff like Boiler Room, for example, when that goes up, or people post things on social media and people comment. But honestly, I feel like a lot of the time, well, if not all of the time, when anyone has something bad to say, it's always kind of like more a projection of their own inner conflict rather than a critique of your actual ability as an artist, as a human being, as whatever. And so a lot of the time I kind of like think about, I try and not read them, but a lot of the time when you're interacting with TikTok or YouTube and things, like, in order to read the good, you also need to read the bad. And sometimes I do like to read the good and see what people are saying and to hear what people think about the music. But whenever I encounter stuff like that, I always just kind of think back on myself and think back on what I've done and what I've achieved, and ultimately I'm the person in this position, I'm the artist who's doing something, and they're just a person that I have no idea who they are, like behind like a screen. And I think because all my life I've dealt with bullying, and I think when you deal with something for your entire life, you do just become innately kind of immune to it and kind of numb to it. So I really just don't care. Like, as long as my life is like going okay and I'm doing well and I'm healthy and my family's healthy and my friends are healthy and I'm able to live my life with joy, then I don't know. It is what it is. Like, I don't care. Like, I genuinely don't care.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Like, it's such a hard one, isn't it? And it's a shame that there is like hate in this world, but I think you kind of have to just like rise above it. And
that is part of the same way of like being black is part of our DNA. Like, experiencing racism also means that it's part of our DNA as well. It's nothing that we can actually change, because these structures are so like deeply built within society that it takes complete kind of like societal reconstruction to change anything. And it's like, all like everything that happened in 2020 didn't change the fact that racism still exists. It's still something that we need to deal with. Obviously, conversations about it need to happen. There needs to be an exploration and like to why certain things happen and how we can better combat it, and how people out with marginalization can be better allies. But ultimately, it's just something that we have to deal with. So it's just something that in essence, we need to accept to some degree.
But I think also, like, by existing in these spaces and by taking up space, like, that is something in itself.
It's so radical. And I think that's another reason why people find it so scary, because it is a very radical form of protest, taking up space. And only a few people do it, and it can only happen to a few people, and it's up to those specific people to be aware of that and to harness it the best that they can, you know. It's a privilege to be able to be put in this position, and it's a privilege to be able to do what I do.
It is a privilege, and I don't know, I don't know about you, I mean, I feel like you're the same as me, but, like, I recognise the, like, having a platform and the importance and, like, the impact you can have. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm doing this podcast and trying to, like, help make the world more equal is because I feel like I have a duty to do it, but I want to do it. And I feel like by doing things like being visible, having conversations, challenging the norm, I think it can make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, like, everything that you've done already, making people, so many people aware of what's actually going on within our industry is amazing. And that obviously wouldn't have happened unless you existed. So, yeah, I think it's very important for us not only to, like, do what we love to do, but to make sure that we are talking on behalf of not only ourselves, but the communities that we inhabit, and to make sure that we're a genuine reflection of that, and we're, like, a vehicle for change.
And also hopefully can inspire people that relate to us to do the same, and in a few years time the scene might look completely different, which is exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just in awe of how Talia articulates herself with such grace and intelligence. She's such an inspiring person, and I can't wait to see what she goes on to achieve and the boundaries she's going to break down her career. So how can we actually improve representation then? Well, this brings me on to one of the key suggestions we recommend in the report, inclusion riders. Inclusion riders are requirements that DJs put in their contract, which holds promoters and venues responsible for booking diverse lineups. If the venue doesn't book a diverse lineup, the DJ is no longer contractually obliged to play. There was nobody better to speak to about these riders than my good friend, Salute.
Hi, I'm Felix, or Salute, he and they, and I'm a DJ and producer.
Salute publicly shared their inclusion rider on Instagram. It says,
the promoter agrees to ensure the inclusion of an underrepresented and or marginalised group in the booking of the artist lineup. The promoter agrees to book at least one or more persons who identify as being a member of an underrepresented group and or marginalised groups playing on the same stage or bigger, or minimum 30% of the artists, whichever is greater. The term underrepresented and marginalised groups is defined as such. Any people who identify themselves as women, black, people of colour, disabled, LGBTQ+, or any combination of these identifying terms as defined by their own choice or description. I reserve the right to deny and retract any contractual agreements that are signed prior if these requirements are not met, voiding any contractual agreements with the promoter.
How amazing is that? Off the top of my head, I can only think of four DJs who aren't women who have inclusion riders. Now imagine how impactful it would be if more big male DJs like Calvin Harris, Fred Again, Patrick Topping followed Salute's example. If we tackle the problem from the top down, imagine how much progress will be accelerated. Why did you feel the need to talk about having an inclusion rider, and why do you think having an inclusion rider is important?
Well, I was just noticing that there were so many talented female DJs, so many talented non-binary DJs, so many talented LGBTQ DJs, etc., that weren't getting the shine that I thought they should. Black DJs, DJs of colour. That was one of the main reasons why I did it. I just wanted to see more people represented that looked like me, that look like my friends who are not white, who look like my friends who are not men, etc. Because I feel like when I was growing up, I missed that on stage, and I feel like had that been there for me, that would have had a huge impact on me. Seeing yourself represented in a DJ booth or on the dance floor, that makes a huge difference. So I think it's a small step, but it's one that I think is necessary.
It was really interesting to hear Salute say that. I remember I used to be a huge Marvel Comics fan as a kid. I remember being so drawn to Storm. Remember Storm from the X-Men? The mutant with the white mohawk who used to cast thunder and lightning and fly. Seeing a black woman character was important to me, as it felt relatable and I could see myself in Storm. And it made me see that Marvel was for me too. How would I have felt if I'd seen a DJ who looked like me? Which reminds me, recently I got sent a photo from a producer called Ghost 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 of his 3-year-old daughter. She was glued to my Mixmag lab set. You can just see the silhouette of her cute little afro and spotty pyjamas in front of the TV screen. I'm obsessed. And this just shows you how valuable representation is.
Hey, my name is Ghost Ghost Ghost. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a DJ producer based in Northern Ireland, and I'm also a dad of a 3-year-old biracial girl. So, on to representation. It's something that's important to me because I'm black, I'm from East London, but I also went to like the whitest school, an all boys grammar school in London. Then I went to uni in Newcastle, also very white. So I've been used to being the only black face in the room. But enough about me. I'd rather talk about my daughter. And like when your child says, "Daddy, I want to be XYZ," you want to be able to say that's possible and like have an example of someone that like looks like them doing it. Because you can say yes, and the next question is going to be, well, okay, who does it then? So it means she points at Jaguar, playing at the lab, and after commenting on a dress, which was amazing, she goes, "I like this song. Can I play songs like her? Can I be like her?" She's now asking for braids that are going to take ages to do, as a DJ has braids. So if I'm going to play music, Daddy, I need braids. When she has on her purple Disney princess dress, because that was the closest thing to Jack's dress, and she's playing at being a DJ, pretending to play like Daddy's records, like, it just means I'm not lying to her when I tell her you can do it, as like she can see someone that looks like her that's doing it right now and winning it.
Oh my God, how beautiful is that? It makes me want to cry. It's also so, so wonderful to see men engaging with the report and supporting the good fight. This is a team effort at the end of the day. Anyway, back to my conversation with Salute. What words do you have to kind of, I guess, our male DJ peers?
I think it's important to remember that the playing field has never been level, and that doing stuff like this can help, even though it won't solve all the issues. I think it's a step in the right direction. Just because I have an inclusion rider doesn't mean that the job ends there. It goes way beyond that. But doing that is such an easy way to ensure that whatever happens, you're always going to be on a diverse lineup, and that in itself is something that we should be striving for.
Yeah, really well said, actually. What else do you think the industry, both DJs, promoters, agents, managers, label heads, people behind the scenes as well, could be doing to just make the scene a more inclusive place?
I think when we talk about inclusion riders, you also need to remember that it's not just enough to be like, okay, I'm going to put one token person on this lineup just to fill a quota. You need to think sort of beyond that, and also make sure you're paying people fairly, because that is an issue that even though, yeah, a promoter might book a diverse lineup, what are the people who are the people of colour, the women, etc., what are they earning, what are they taking away? And I think making sure that people are paid fairly will always make a space more inclusive. But then also seeing, reaching out and seeing what can we do to make our spaces safer so that people will actually join them. Because I know a lot of people who are like women or people of colour who won't go into certain dance music spaces because they don't feel safe in them. And I think speaking and engaging with the communities that come in, and dance in the venues that you put nights on is really, really important. Because, yeah, it's great to have like new faces on the lineup, but having people on the dance floor, that is important as well.
If you're an artist and you want to start using an inclusion rider, you can find a template on the JaguarFoundation.net. When we consider ways of improving diversity in dance music, it's also really important to see people nurturing new talent, something I've seen the benefits of firsthand with the Future 1000 initiative, a free online course for female, trans and non-binary young people taking their first steps into music. It's still available for anyone wanting to get into DJing aged between 12 and 18, and I loved getting to know the students from the course and giving them their first gigs. Looking to the future feels like a great place to leave this documentary. Things are improving, and by having conversations like the ones you've heard today, we can accelerate that change. Audre Lorde's evolution is happening all around us. There has been a notable increase in the number of artists from marginalised genders. We're also slowly seeing diversity on lineups move in the right direction. With education, representation, and improvements to safety and accessibility, we can become even stronger. I'm feeling positive about the future. I hope this documentary has empowered you. If it has, please go and tell your friends, especially the men in your life. I've personally felt incredibly inspired making this. Huge thank you to all the contributors who've shared their stories and experiences so honestly. If you'd like to read the full report, you can access it for free online at thejaguarfoundation.net. And a huge thank you to my producer, Katie Baxter, aka K-Bax, who has just been so monumental, so wonderful to work with, and couldn't have done this without her. And cheers to you for fighting the good fight.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.